got scheduled. But you still didn't make it here tonight. So that's kind of my pretend excuse why I'm not as prepared as I normally am. But you all know I always say that. I'm never quite prepared. But there's always something scheming, something going on that I appreciate sharing with you. Being practice period, I've been thinking quite a bit what practice period means, getting ready for Shasheen. It's a big effort by people, big commitment by people. And the practice period every year. And it's also the month that I met Angie 11 years ago. I met my teacher, our teacher. There's a lot of things that I've been thinking about, and I've been thinking quite a bit. What is it, especially in lieu of our business meeting that we had a few weeks ago, what does it mean to have a teacher? What does it mean to be a student? What does it mean to study? What is a spiritual practice? What is my spiritual practice? What is my relationship is with the teacher and the practice? So I've had a lot of, that's what's been swirling around in my mind. And I told Ritu, says, yeah, I think I'm going to talk about the teacher and student relationship next week for Tuesday. And she goes, oh, don't, I'm not going to be there. I said, okay. And I go, that's fine. I still got to stew on it a bit anyway. But you know how synchronicity is. Things happen that way anyway. I said, oh, good. I'll just go back to the mind training. And that's just interesting because where I would be and where I left you all is on point four, which is make practice your whole life. So it's kind of funny that I didn't get away from it at all or change the topic at all, really, for me. But make your practice your whole life is the fourth mind training point. So for review, I've been working with Norman Fisher's book. I don't think, Bob, if you've seen this or you've been here when I guess you all know that I've talked about this. Yeah. And so for review, it was there's 7 points for the mind training. The first point was about resolve to begin. Basically is train in the preliminaries, basically practice. The second point was training in compassion and empathy. This was about developing bodhicitta, that both in the relative and absolute ways of defining bodhicitta, or the ways of looking at or practicing bodhicitta. The third mind training point was transforming bad circumstances into the path. And this is really what the mind training is to take something that we don't like to look at. Like, I don't really like to deal with conflict. You know, it's not like I go out of my way to look for it. Others may thrive in it, or fear. But the mind training and what the slogans are about is to go towards something that you're not comfortable with and turn it around. Make it something that you can practice with. Turn it around so that you can add it to something that will help you wake up along the path. So the fourth point of the mind training is where I left off, or where I'm beginning tonight, really, is make practice your whole life. The traditional way of saying it, and I didn't bring the comparisons, but the traditional way of saying it that let me see if I can find it. I believe it is taking the five strengths on your spiritual path in life. Essentially, practice to live. Practice with these five strengths, which I'll share with you. And the second slogan is practice the same as in death. Meaning that there's not any great distinction between the way that we live or die. I think many of us have heard that. We die the way we live. Conversely, we're living the way we probably die. So making practice our whole life. This is what I've really been reflecting on during this practice period. Practice is not something special. It's, as we probably all know, wandering on our spiritual path or wanting to be spiritual isn't something separate than our day-to-day lives. The sacred is here in the everyday ordinariness of our life. Always when people go to retreat, usually on the closing day or towards the end, people go, oh, I want to take this with me. I want to take the serenity and the quietness and the discipline and home with me. And the truth is, there is no separate. There's no reason that we can't take any of that home with us. It's with us and available to us all the time, 24/7. Our practice is not outside of ourselves. Our practice is not something outside of the Zendo. Our practice is not something that just happens on Tuesday nights when we come here and gather. So how do we do that? How is it that we do that? How is it that we remind ourselves to practice? Remind ourselves that of that aspiration to practice. So in the Tibetan and traditional trainings of Lojong in the practice, mind training practice, there are five strengths to help you along the way. Here it is. The 17th slogan is, Norman Fisher calls it, cultivate a serious attitude. But I got to laugh a little bit about that because I know some Zen practitioners and students that take ourselves way too seriously. I mean, you can choose to be that way. Feel free. But it's my everyday life, and I see quite a bit of humor in my everyday life. So when I make practice my whole life, that includes practicing with some humor. If you know what I mean. I see some heads resonating with that. And traditionally it's called practice the five strengths. So this is what the Pema Chodron and her teacher, that's how they train with the Tibetans. He talks about, he starts it off, probably our biggest challenge in spiritual practice is that we don't have enough time or talent or focus or the right atmosphere or setting. He says probably the biggest challenge is simply is that we don't take ourselves seriously enough. Meaning that taking our practice seriously. And the traditional way of looking at that is there are five strengths that we can focus on and use to our advantage to help us take our practice or cultivate a serious practice with our attitude. They are strong determination, familiarization, seed of virtue, which I like that one quite a bit, as opposed to the next one, reproach, and aspiration. The strong determination is pretty much like what it sounds like. This is when we take our bodhisattva vow, it's determining that, yes, I am committed to this path. Yes, I am going to sit every day. Yes, I'm going to come on Tuesday nights. Yes, I want to practice with the Sangha. Yes, I want to live with the precepts in my daily life. It's a strong determination, and I think this is where it is about taking our practice seriously. It's okay to have a serious spiritual practice. That's okay. It's not something that we can talk about. I think that's why it's also important that we have a relationship with our teacher, getting back to one of the main things that I've been thinking about recently. Also important to have Sangha, where you can share your feelings or thoughts, how to work with the practice on day-to-day life. How do you work with it in a corporate setting? How do you have your practice when your marriage is not... when your marriage is very challenging or you have a challenging relationship with your teenager or whatnot. All of that is real. Strong determination is remembering that. And to be honest with ourselves about that. Familiarization is another strength that we can build. This is like memorizing the Heart Sutra. This is like our body being familiar every time we sit down. It's like, you know, the practice, again, practice, doing the same thing over and over again, you become better at it. You familiarize yourself with it. Familiarization is, you could say it's brainwashing, but we're going to call it mind training or training the mind in this practice, but it is. It's training it in a new way, reinforcing it, familiarizing it more with the virtues of practice and how we practice, which ties in with the next one, which is the seed of virtue. And this is recognizing our noble heritage of being human. The seed of virtue is that, one, for me, thinking about it, is that we have this opportunity to practice. We're not living in a country where practice is difficult. We're not like having, I don't have to have three jobs or practice my spiritual tradition in secret. I'm not worried about feeding myself or my family. I have time to reflect. I have the luxury of being able to go on a shashin for a week. So one, in that one aspect, that is a very wonderful thing to think about, to know how lucky I am. But also just being human. Being human is a very precious thing. Precious action of all the living beings, and I think we talked about this before or something. I brought up spiders, I think. There are more spiders than anything else in the world. But it's pretty precious being born a human. So that's a seed of virtue. What makes us human? What makes us human, one of the definitions, I believe, is that we can even talk about having a spiritual practice. That we have questions like, why are we here? What am I a part of? What is something bigger than I am? What is that that I feel? Or not. The seed of virtue is even making a commitment of learning to be a more compassionate person. That's what makes us human. Reproach is the fifth or the fourth of the five strengths. And reproach is kind of a tricky one, I think, for us, because we have a lot of guilt and, you know, reproach to me is like I can see this a finger like shaking at me. Well, it's okay to shake a finger at an ego that's acted out of place, or it's okay to kind of shake your finger. Realizing when I'm unskillful, I think it's okay to say, hey, you goofed up. Recognizing that. Reproaching myself. Giving myself a little talk. Hey, you could do this better next time that you do this. Am I already out of time? I started looking at the clock. I meant to bring my watch, but of course I didn't. So reproach is not a bad thing if we do it honestly with ourselves, learning from it. And just with every breath, it comes and it goes. So we can start over again. Reproach ourselves and let it go. The last strength that can help us practice or live a life of practice is aspiration. As with all lists of things that we have in Buddhism, it all seems to tie in together to the one before, where everything to me just feels like it's connected. It's having aspiration that this is a bit about having faith. Believing in ourselves that we too can choose to not live in a world of suffering. Having an aspiration of, we can do this. And this, again, I believe ties in with having a teacher. Someone that can help you. Someone that can inspire you. Someone who could model for you. And then all these five strengths, practice for death as well as for life. He says that it is artificial to separate life from death. Time passing is birth and death, he writes. Moments arise and then pass away. This is one action, one moment. Loss is constant, and conditions are every thought, word, and deed. And in fact, and he mentions that when he was training people in hospice, that he was training people in how to live more than how to be with the dying. And I always thought that was true for myself as it, when I was an active grief counselor and working in hospice. Having that opportunity of being with someone close to death or in that process, you really get that the whole lesson is about living. So as we prepare to live well, we're also preparing ourselves for our death. They're not separate. In Zen, I think we intellectualize that a lot. So we need practice again, practice, to truly understand that, to embody that. To know that nothing is with us forever, nothing. And our practice of our breath, coming and going, beginning and ending, beginning and ending. How do you get through Shashin? How do you get through practice period? One breath at a time. He writes, human beings are not just complex machines. Even though we now understand the lungs, the heart, the stomach, and so on, and can take apart and put together a human body and repair it in all kinds of previously unimaginable ways, we know that a human being is not limited to his or her material hardware. We may understand a lot about what a human body is and how it works, but we understand very little about the soul, the spirit, the consciousness that illuminates that human body and makes it a living human being. So, those were my thoughts. Some of them. So tell me, what kind of thoughts do you have about practice? How did you resonate with anything I said or not? What makes sense? What is a practice period for you? Or what is a practice and daily coming and goings look like for you or not? Is it easy for you to keep it united, integrated, or are sometimes more difficult than others? Bon.
Well, I think practice is really year-round, day by day, minute by minute, but my understanding of the practice period is it's a time set aside to try to reflect on the practice and augment it, you know, be a little more diligent or serious, or do some more stuff. It's kind of hard for me right this particular year because I'm so busy with a lot of stuff going on. So it will be a real challenge. But it's good, you know. And you know, in a sense, you just can only do what you can do. But I think the important thing is it's a time to reflect on the practice and see, do you want to try to deepen it or, you know, take it somewhere further or just be more aware of it, of the need to do it.
Mm-hmm. So, or not.
Yeah, well.
That's a strong determination.
But I'm trying to do it. every day anyway. I mean, I was just something I decided to take a month ago, and I was having some difficulties. So then, I work on some stuff. I need to be a little more, tuned into it.
Well, what would that look like? What does that look like for you? A little more tuned into it.
It means just being more aware of it, you know, in day-to-day situations.
Like being more mindful, or being
mindful, more accepting of things, not always trying to, you know, immediately judge every little situation that comes up according to some idea that I have about how it should be. You just accept it as it really is.
As it is.
And not try to add this extra stuff mm-hmm. that my mind wants to create and pile on top of it. You know, just go with it. Mm-hmm. So to some extent, that's working. No.
That is the practice.
And that's the practice. So from that sense, I mean, it's always that way.
Mm-hmm.
No matter whether it's practice period or not.
Right.
The practice period is a good time to reflect on that. Maybe your practice is a little tune up, you know, or
mm-hmm.
you can deepen it
mm-hmm.
or whatever. So that's it for me on that.
Thank you, Ron. Sami?
I know very little about it, but the few times that I'm, you know, working on it, it seems to me like getting ready for a fun party. People that you're inviting, which is the Sesshin, are, you know, mm-hmm, usually mm-hmm. people you like or learn to like.
Mm-hmm.
So
come to like.
Or if you don't, it becomes really nice and challenging and you grow through it. But it's just like cleaning around the corners, and you're the only one that knows that that corner was clean. Mm-hmm. And just like fine-tuning things, kind mm-hmm. of getting in shape. Yes, every day is really nice, but to me, if a test hasn't been set, I probably won't study as hard. So, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's a nice thing.
Yeah.
Like standing in line, not getting pissed that so-and-so's taking so long to pay and I'm in a hurry. It's like, okay, you know.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
It's nice to have.
Yeah, it's kind of, I had this vision, kind of, Ron, when you were talking, and I finished it up with you. It's like, you know, checking the batteries in your fire alarms in your house, you know, doing that every once in a while just to make sure they still work. It's that sense. Yes, we can do that at any time, but it's during ongo, it's during our declared practice period that we kind of straighten it up, like you said, dust in the corners and get ready for Shasheen and do inventory in our, you know, supply box. And some other thoughts or how's it, is it going for practice period, your commitment to yourself? Fun.
Interestingly, I think either this morning or yesterday morning when I was preparing to go sit in the morning out in the backyard, I had that very often feeling come about me, which is that coffee was really good and I've been listening to this Dharma talk and it's really comfortable. Maybe I could just go back to sleep when I got up too early and I could just skip today. And then I think to myself, you know, this is Ongo, and here I am trying to take a break, and I think I end up actually feeling more like backing off during this period for some reason, and I sort of think about it, and I just let it go. But last time we had this period, which was in the end of the year last year, I was very focused, and of course, I guess I was a little bit newer at the time. So I was memorizing the metta, but there was no Dokusan or Vanji, and there was no reference to it. Of course, I think something had gotten in the way, so I really piled it on myself. And now when it's sort of been opened up as something we're all talking about and we should be doing, it's also that thing where there's no agreement with your teacher, nothing in writing, it's all on you. And so I slide back to that kind of, well, maybe I could just go have a drink or, you know, not meditate this morning. And my self, the Dawn, says, no, you've got to, you know, I've got to memorize Seneca and all of that. But it's funny because in the back of my mind, I'm really trying to take a break and not do any of it.
So yeah, it's a cross between, like, yeah, reproach and, yeah, I've done everything but what I thought I was going to do. I've done a lot of different things. I mean, it's been very foremost in my mind, but I'm also got this little kid going, I ain't doing that, you know. I saw Tenzin Palmer in Santa Cruz several years ago. I don't know that she's going to be doing any more tours or lecture tours. She's now in India, but she was the a woman that one of the first women to practice Tibetan Buddhism, and she did a 10 years in a cave or 3 years in the cave. In fact, there's a book, I have it somewhere, probably Bring It This Way, a fascinating book, but it's one of a much longer retreat. I'm just thinking about that, you know, spending 3 years, 10 years meditating in a cave. So she was asked, you know, I saw her, and it was so funny because when I had a chance to actually meet her face to face, I went, hi, you know, I'm like, I was just so enamored with her. And during her lecture, somebody asked her, she goes, well, how did you just meditate every day? How can you do this? And she laughed, literally kind of laughed, and she says, if I ask myself, even during the time in deep retreat, if I asked myself if I wanted to meditate, I would probably never meditate. I just get up and meditate. I don't ask myself. And I just thought that was so profound. Here is this hero of mine, you know, this woman that, God, was in this cave. She slept in this, she's a tall woman too, and she slept in this little traditional box, and oh my goodness. She doesn't ask herself, she just meditates. It's a pretty strong determination and aspiration. Well, thank you again for letting me try to articulate some thoughts about all of this. And let Dawn know if we're going to Shasheen. It's not something we should do. I noticed that you said that, and I don't know, maybe a couple of us have said that. None of this practice is about should. It's really our natural way of being. And recognizing that. Thank you, and I'm sure we have announcements of some sort or not.